Hello, dear friends, and welcome to another episode of Life of Love, where we explore and embrace differences and ways we show up in love and kindness and service. And today it's a very special time because I'm interviewing a professional that I've known from speech pathology since the early 2000s. And I backdated it, and it was about 2004 because my son was 1 year old. He was just a baby when we worked together for the conference to produce continuing ed hours for speech. So it's just been a really great circle to come back to because I was just young, just moved to Atlanta, and now I'm 50. Let's go. Tim, thanks so much for being here.
We did meet around 2004. I've been an SLP for 31 years. I had a severe stutter through undergraduate school. So I grew up stuttering. There's stuttering on my dad's side of the family. And the teasing and bullying began around second grade. And I developed quite the identity of a stutterer, where you are worried every day, who's going to say something, what's going to happen, who's going to find out. And for someone who doesn't outgrow stuttering, because they say that at least maybe 80 to 85% of children who have a mild stutter will just outgrow without therapy. But it's really focusing in on what it's like to grow up with a stutter. Now, you and I also know through speech that stuttering is not the only issue that can be a challenge. I could still have a lisp in middle school and high school. I may not be able to make my R sound in high school. And there's a lot of different things that can draw attention. So when your speech doesn't fall into the norms, and it's your first impression oftentimes, I do want to stress it's not your last impression. Because some people really get hung up on, if I stutter in an interview, then I won't get the job. Like I've ruined my first impression. But anyways, so growing up stuttering was very difficult. And the speech therapy I had 5 years of speech therapy. I wasn't getting better. I was actually getting worse. I would go to a little room for speech therapy. And I can figure out now that they presented things that were so basic and simple to say that I didn't stutter. So the goals for fluency were met. But the reality was outside of the speech room. And so if kids said stuff to me in the hallway, or I started to stutter when I read out loud and somebody filled in the word for me or snickered, all that kind of business, like going to summer camp was difficult. But so stuttering can develop, and you develop anxiety about stuttering. One of the talking points right now is stuttering is not caused by trauma. We have to clarify, though, that it's traumatic experiences that translate to anxiety and avoidance. So a little three-year-old who begins to stutter, he didn't begin to stutter because of trauma. But what locks in when you're 7, 8, 9, 10, 15, you're still stuttering and you have anxiety, you have encountered some very difficult moments. And our own temperaments are very important to consider, because one person is better able to handle being mimicked than another. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm a big, scrappy guy who really excels on the sports field and I'm taller and stronger than someone picking on me, maybe I'm better able to push back. But anyways, temperament is very important to consider how we personalize our speech challenges, how good we are at being able to advocate. I was always told, just try to ignore it. Just try to ignore it. The thing is when you're teased and bullied, if you try to ignore it, it takes a toll. You still feel hurt. So I'm really big about telling kids, if someone's curious, they say, why do you talk that way? Because I stutter, right? If it's, you can tell that the person is sincere and curious. If it's snarky, mean-spirited, laughing, mimicking, why do you talk that way? You can just tell by the person's tone of voice that you do push back. You say, I stutter, so what? You have to preserve your energy and your power. Otherwise, you give it to others.
Right, and that's part of living your life of love is being heard and seen and connected to your environment. And so if you're putting yourself out there with your energy of voice is coming back with insecurities and, like you said, bullying, then you're learning trauma, even though it might have been that you were trying to express a really complex idea and you're this bright child with a million ideas going through your head and you just can't get the words out fast enough. That's a normal thing with childhood. But when that is taken as a problem or you're made fun of because you can't get your words out, then like you said, that's where the trauma and the energy of it, you being different, of you being cast out or whatever you said in your, and then you said the predisposition for being sensitive. That just is another layer on the cake. So yeah, it's, and I can see why you're so successful in your practice and you have patients all over the world because you lived with it and you went through, you're giving people what you wish you would have had. You didn't get this kind of treatment. You didn't get this kind of understanding.
You know, if you think of an old-fashioned scale with the two plates, there are different techniques and strategies to help me to reduce my rate, to loosen my moments of stuttering, to stutter more easily, for my speech more fluid. Once a child begins to get the identity of the stutterer, they start to have beliefs. Because I stutter, I'm different, I'm awkward. My stuttering is a burden to people. Kids might start asking their parents to order food, or they go to sign in for a soccer clinic, and they ask, "Hey, mom, will we go sign in for me because I don't want to stutter." That's where the psychology part is critical for our field to understand. In voice disorders, just a quick tangent, voice disorders, they're really into counseling and CBT, not CBD, folks. that seems to be everywhere. Like creams are going to cure my
just put it on your throat.
And that was missing. So I got out of graduate school in 1992, and I still had a large number of places and situations where I was guaranteed to block. And blocking is the tightest stuttering. For example, calling someone and trying to go from my first name to my last name, Tim, and people would hang up because they didn't hear anything. Okay, that I still had anxiety about stuttering. Some of the beliefs that I had were, as an SLP, I can't stutter. I have to be fluent 24/7, 365, because I just, I'm a fraud, right?
People think you're dishonest because you're dishonest because you're helping them with something that you struggle with. You have to be perfect. Like, we all have these ideas that we have to be perfect people to be valid. And it's just nuts. It's like an exercise in insanity, you know, like we're all doing our best.
Well said. Doing our best. Mm-hmm. That's right. Could an occupational therapist have dealt with fine motor issues or something? Could a PT have dealt with things in their life that affect their balance and gait pattern? They can.
Right.
So I do want to back up real quick. When I moved to Atlanta in 87, I still had a severe stutter. I moved down here alone and with no job and no money. I came down to house sit. was like, well, I don't have any rent. But I went through a number of hideous jobs. Now, I had a degree, but this is pre-internet, so you couldn't, you had to drive to the place of business to apply or call. I already told you when I called, I got hung up on because nothing came out of my mouth. Driving from North Atlanta, for example, to East Point, 40-minute drive, 50-minute drive, and I had no money, which means I have no gas. And driving through Atlanta is no walk in the park, only to walk in and have the word application be the most difficult word in the world because I made it so. I feared the word. And anyways, I went to work at a hotel in downtown Atlanta, the Westin Plaza, which is the tall, narrow one that's like a silo. Now
it's the one with the rotating restaurant on the top.
It doesn't turn anymore. But
They don't turn it anymore.
Liability. But anyways, it's still a great view from up there. But so working at the front desk, check in, check out. Remember, folks, this is around 1988, 89. Internet wasn't born. So remember when everyone actually checked in, checked out. Now, this hotel.
Oh, and you had to. I worked at a hotel in the early 90s. You have to call and process every reservation. Yeah.
So check in, check out, verbal. It's a 1,200-room hotel in downtown Atlanta. So sometimes they would turn over the property, the entire property, in 2 days to get ready for one from one trade show to the other. So I put myself in of total immersion. I was working at the front desk and I was going to two Toastmasters clubs a week. Full immersion to face my phobia. I had to get the telephone at the front desk. If a customer came up and said, hey, we don't have towels, right in front of them, I would call housekeeping for towels. Now, if you've never stuttered, you're like, this is the story, so what? But remember, if you have a phobia of talking, which I did. So that's what I did. And then I finally burned out because I was working so many hours. Now, I was promoted to management in the hotel. I was like, what is that? I mean, I couldn't believe I was. But my last department was 124 employees. But salary at a hotel, you might work 70 hours a week, like Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Day, New Year's Day, your birthday. So anyways, I tapped out. I went to graduate school. So during graduate school, I figured out a lot about my stuttering. The thing is, as I mentioned, when I came out, I still had anxiety. And that's where the CBT and the psychology part of speech therapy, and it's not taught in graduate school. So I invested $20,000 of my own money to do trainings outside of our field, first to help myself, than to help others. So you mentioned, I do my best to offer to people what I'd never had. That's very much true. I also, there's a quote I love. The map is not the territory. And what I mean by that is what I put myself through to speak the way I want to speak, I would not expect everyone to do that. So that's important too. My criteria was I want to public speak. I want to go into courtrooms as an expert witness. I want to teach conferences. I taught college for 2 years. Now I'm doing podcasts and video content. So I wanted to unleash myself. And so I have to be mindful. I'm not going to put my map on the territory of someone else who stutters. If you come to me and I have people who want to be a pilot in the military, a police officer, clergy, a professor, a pharmacist, a nurse, an ICU nurse, all these speaking roles, if they say this is the criteria I either have to meet, because there are like a pilot, you really can't stutter. I know that because I've helped several. I helped some that got kicked out of pilot school, military pilot school, when they stuttered. Anyways, if you say this is the criteria, I'm starting to go in the courtroom. I'm doing depositions. This is what I want. I'm going to do my best to help that person because I'm going to put together the speech therapy and the psychology components together to help them do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. And that's really important to know what somebody's goals and aspirations are. And then I do want to hold space for your bravery.
Oh.
And yeah. Mm-hmm. It took a lot for you to get to where you are, and you faced a lot of demons.
Yes. Necessity is the mother of invention. And I was baroque. No job, no money, and unable to say my last name. That is the truth. And pushed up in a corner like that, I used to go to the shopping mall and fake stutter. 30 stutters in 30 minutes was my quota, and I met my quota.
Because you knew that would take the emotional charge out of it if you were in control.
Correct.
The one time I went to your conference, and it was so awesome when you had I'll never forget the Chinese finger trap. And I use that visualization in so many things. Like, what pressure am I putting on myself that I can't release from this trap? And it's so applicable to your whole life, is that, you know, the tension that you put on yourself keeps you in the finger trap.
And, fighting, you know, resisting against something.
Surrender. It's such a spiritual word. It's such a spiritual path. And you've incorporated that surrender, whether you realized it or not. You internalized it when you were forcing yourself to stutter 30 times in 30 minutes. When you came up with when you looked at this toy and you realized it could help people.
You also probably, when you were at, when you arranged for me to speak at a conference or two, because I did several at that hospital, I always brought in guest speakers. I'm known for bringing in guest speakers. And in some cases, with the consent of the parent, we'll show the video of the child when I met him. And then that child walks on the stage and starts talking, and everyone starts crying. Not only has the child transformed the way they communicate, but you can hear a message that I am more than stuttering. And here I am. This is what I've learned. This is who I am now. So pretty cool.
So inspiring. Mm. It's magical.
Yes. We talked a little bit about faith, right? Mm-hmm. And in Exodus 4:10, Moses, we learn that Moses used to allow his brother to speak for him. And then God came to Moses and said, I want you to go speak to the Pharaoh and lead the people out. Got to ask yourself, there's one disciple who stutters, one, and he gets this big assignment, one of the biggest assignments we know of. So who was Moses that was more than stuttering? What did God know? He was courageous. He was a leader. He was dependable. He was a communicator at the end of the day, even though he had trouble talking, and he used to defer to his brother. So he does. He has success. He goes to the Pharaoh. And Moses transforms, we learn later in the Bible. And I always tell people, you are more than stuttering. And I had to learn I was, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we're down, maybe we're being teased and bullied. We go to apply for a job and we stutter, and they never say you're not getting the job because of your stuttering. But you may walk out of there feeling convinced. That's the reason. We don't know for sure, but drawing upon faith that there's something bigger and stronger. I met a priest, and he said, always take it to the cross. And it's interesting. He grew up in Poland. And his mother was held by the Nazis. And anyways, his message was, you know, always take it to the cross. And my takeaway from that is that there's something we just have to, no matter what your faith is, we have to believe there's something bigger. Something
right, and
lean
there's
on.
A reason. Like, if the reason they didn't hire you is because of your stutter, there was a bigger plan, and that was just the synchronicity that prevented you from going down the wrong path. Yeah. And if you can look at life as that you're being held, that everything that doesn't work out because, like, for example, if you had gotten those first jobs, would you have been as dedicated as you are to your patients, your clients, your friends, right? Yeah. Like, and you're changing the world by raising awareness and letting people know that, okay, so you're taught this in speech pathology school, you're taught the anatomy, you're taught the muscle tightness, you know, the physiology, you're taught to do drills and perform these activities in a workbook, but you're not taught to say, hey, you know, like, you have chakras, you have energy systems, and some people's are just blocked. And when you can't express yourself, that's your throat chakra.
That's fourth chakra. Is that fourth?
It's your root, your sacral, your solar plexus, your heart, your throat. Fifth.
Okay. Have you read the book The Anatomy of the Spirit?
No.
I believe the author's last name is Mace. I can't spell it correctly, but it's one of her big things is about being able to forgive people. And I read the book, The Anatomy of the Spirit. And the fifth chakra is communication, the voice, right? Is that right?
Yes, your throat. But if there's anything going on in your heart, it can affect the flow through your throat. So it's about flow, and then it ties in with the whole, you know, your last name has a hard stop, that and so the flow, when you had to stop and build up air pressure for your k sound, it stopped the flow, and then your negative experiences just exacerbated that hard stop, and it introduced and you know this, I'm just speaking to the audience, but it introduced this hesitation that gave space for something else to come in that you didn't need, like that pause. You didn't need it, but it developed.
Well, ironically, my first name ends with an M. My last name begins with an M. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until my mid-20s when I said, keep your voice going, Tim Mackesy.
Just let it flow.
But the panic before the first name, you know, you bring up the chakra, and I mentioned the book, The Anatomy of the Spirit, and The Power of Forgiveness. And the author gives this story, a Native American male who is drafted, I believe, to go to Vietnam. He's helped captive. And the Vietnamese were especially cruel to minorities. This man was tortured. Now, he was rescued by our troops, brought back to America, and he was in and out of trouble and drugs and alcohol and stuff. And somebody got the idea, send him back to his village, to his people. And they listened. They formed a circle, and they let him say the entire story because he wanted to go back and get even. That wouldn't have worked out well. But they had a ceremony, if I recall, where they had him stand in the river and call back his spirit, which required him forgiving his captors. It was the only way that he could, you know, purge all of the hatred and resentment. Now, I'm not saying the gentleman should not have been held resentment. I mean, it's tortured. He watched people. But the power of forgiveness. And now, I always talk about the soma. Soma meaning of body.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're hitting your heart, your chakra, and the soma. And this also comes to stuttering here in a minute. But remember, when we feel emotion in the soma, it could be positive emotion, My son just got into the university, you know, and he's on Hope Scholarship here in Georgia, and we're doing cartwheels, right? Okay. Negative energy can take a lot of forms. A disagreement with somebody. And you feel it in here. You feel it in your soma. Mm-hmm. And then you're overwhelmed. And if you stutter, your stuttering is going to really activate in that moment. But we can, a lot of us have difficulty speaking when that's all aroused and tightened. And then it also might keep us from either approaching somebody, look, what you did really upset me, or forgiving someone. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. And I've really worked on a lot of forgiveness lately, and it comes down to yourself too. Mm-hmm. And when a professional says, well, just don't worry about it. Don't care that you stutter. And then you have this guilt that you shouldn't care. And you have like this layer, this little child or this person who's looking for this professional to help them. And they're told not to feel the way they feel. And it's just another way to cover up the true feeling. And you have to run through that forgiveness if it's an issue. Like like you said, some people aren't affected, but if there is some of this guilt or some of this ownership of it, like, well, I just messed up. And that's another reason why I'm flawed. I stutter and I make bad choices. You know, it's like this
validation. Way. Validation was missing with the person saying, mm-hmm. Oh, just don't worry about it. And to any parents out there, mm-hmm. I've been working with children for 31 years, is validate your child and ask some questions versus going into coaching mode. So I overheard this a few weeks ago. This boy is in carpool. Three other kids. Mom's driving. And he's stuttering. And somebody that was new to the team, wasn't familiar with the stutter, mimicked him. And then one of the other boys that he did know, unfortunately, got caught up and laughed at the mimic. So this boy was distraught. Mom could tell. I mean, just like a sheet went over his face. That's what we're talking about, the trauma. And anyways, he later that night, he still had the look. Mom was like, hey, you know, what's up? And what she said was, Charlie, remember they're your friends, they're on your team, you've known Thomas forever since you were little, don't worry about it. So lack of validation, discounting what happened, going into a coaching mode, right? Mm-hmm. When we could have asked, tell me how you're feeling about what happened in the car. You know, let him get it off of his chest. You're his parent. Then you might ask, is there anything you'd like to do about it? For example, do you want to call so-and-so's mommy? And would you want to talk about what happened? Or do you want to ask, you know, before the next practice to meet and talk about what happened that you stutter and, you know, and not to tease my stuttering and laugh at my stuttering. I mean, so you help the child make some decisions to advocate because it's going to happen later too.
Right. And then have compassion. You know, you could teach that child a lesson instead of, oh, don't worry about it. They're just your friends or they're just stupid kids. You know, like go through the exercise and yes. Talk about how, that's pretty cruel. It's a bad choice. Yeah. And, that's you know, right. You wouldn't do that to somebody. And so that was really, it hurts, you know. Yeah.
One of the greatest things at a school, for example, if a teacher picks up on teasing and different parents are informed of what's going on, is you sit down, the teaser and the one that got teased, and the one who got teased is able to say, this is how you made me feel. And the teaser apologizes. It's facilitated. I made that very quick, but it's facilitated. And you, the one that's teasing learns, oh my gosh, my actions, my words have an outcome. And then the other one can learn to forgive. You know, I'll meet people who stutter in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, who have vivid memories of elementary school when they were teased, bullied, or avoided. Because sometimes when you avoid talking, it can sting as much as, like if I know I didn't try out for the play because of my stuttering, even though I was an incredible singer, incredible dancer, and I could speak. And everyone was like, why aren't you trying out? You're the perfect for the role. Oh, I just, so sometimes when we avoid it hurts too.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, the number one fear of adults is public speaking. And I think the real culprit there is when we project our thoughts. What will people think of my talking? So if I'm in sales, for example, and my manager says, Tim, I want you to lead the sales meeting for the first time. And I'm wondering what my manager is going to think. I'm wondering what my peers are going to think. Or if I'm at a conference and people I don't know. And I'm so caught up in wondering what they think about how I talk, how I look. Am I qualified? Do I have the pedigree? Some of them are older than me. I don't deserve to be up here. And all of a sudden, person who doesn't stutter has anxiety.
Oh, totally. Totally. That it just, and so it's just another layer that taxes your neurology. Your nervous system gets fried and you lose control. And, you know, it's funny. That's one of the reasons I always ask God to help me bring forth a message for the highest good. And then I stop being nervous because I know I'm in service and God, I've asked God to help me. So that's how spirituality comes into me getting over being nervous about having a podcast. And, you know, I get nervous saying people guess names and I'll stutter almost every time. And I was like, it's just because I'm a speech pathologist and I think I should pronounce everyone's name perfectly. And it's just, it's the funniest thing because 9 times out of 10, I get a little hesitation about the last name and I'll say, you know, I'm going to put pressure on myself. But if you, if you have that faith that God's there and you're showing up in your highest good to help God fulfill whatever you're here for, because that's what we're all trying to figure out what we're here for and how we can have the happiest, most fulfilling life and get our needs met. And, you know, it comes down to that and helping to live a life of love is releasing and having faith. And forgiving and that compassion, and it all ties into how you treat stuttering. So I just adore the message that came through today.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that. Yeah. It's an interesting thing to stutter because it's the way you talk is altered. And then, you know, we talked about if you have anxiety or fear, that it's a complex thing. If a child has a lisp, a frontal lisp, we get the tongue placed behind the teeth and we get S in all positions of the words and S blends and all of a sudden that stick, stop, basket, brisket, sunburst, and they have all their S's everywhere. And stuttering is a unique animal. But I'm glad to see it being portrayed better in movies like The King's Speech.
I was just going to say that movie was, I thought of you actually when I saw that movie. I'm like, I bet Tim is having his patients see this. It's so good.
Finally, a hero who stutters.
Finally.
And then I want to put in a plug for an indie movie, When I Stutter. You can look up whenistutter.org. It's a beautiful movie.
That's great. And I know that when I had, I've only had a couple of fluency patients or little boys that stuttered mostly. And when I was able to share with them the list of celebrities and people who you didn't realize struggled with it, when I was able to just show them that they weren't alone.
Yes.
That was huge.
I like, you can pull up, when George Springer was the, remember he was MVP of the All-Star game around 2017 when the Astros won the World Series, and he was, I think, MVP of the World Series as well. But he has a mild stutter still. As he's walking up to the microphone, and you can hear him have his hang-ups. I like that too, because some of the models, some of the actors and actresses, you're like, well, I've never heard them stutter.
So then they're in role. Yeah.
Well, then, but you could chase the goal that I want to speak perfectly like Emily Blunt, but she says she does still stutter in real life, but you never see her stutter in a movie role. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a bunch of celebrities who, whenever you've seen them or heard them, they you can't pick up the stutter in most cases. Mm-hmm. So the goal is not to be perfect. There's no perfect. There's no cure for stuttering, but mm-hmm. people can reach heights for sure.
Definitely. And isn't that such a life skill to know that you don't have to be perfect, that you just show up the best you can? And wouldn't our world just be a better place if we let down those crazy expectations that nobody can fulfill?
Social media has not helped these young kids, where the more swipes and likes and heart emojis and whatever, the more popular you are on social, the better person you are. And that is a false narrative. And we talk about when we, I'm going to give you a quick story. I was talking to a girl. She had a girl over at her house overnight. She could pick one person for her birthday party. One, because it was a special thing, like go to the theater, go to like the Fox Theater and dinner and sleepover. One person. So that person comes and is indulged. That person is picked up by parents day after, goes home, and that person has a big pool party, not inviting the girl who had just made her special.
And they posted pictures.
And then here comes all the social media. Here with my BFFs. So this girl was 13, very impressionable, invites, why not me? I'm not good enough to be there. And the hurt. And social media, because it's live, it's streaming, everyone's liking the pictures. I wish I was there. So it's just a whole new way for children to have to be tough. And it's not really taught, like telling them, okay, when you look at video content that you weren't included, you're projecting. You might have to forgive that person, right? Mm-hmm. But the depression and everything in kids who stutter, there can be, I learned about Instagram and Finsta, fake Insta, right? So Julie and Tim and a few other people have a private thread. We're talking about Steven stuttering behind his back. Until somebody does like a screenshot and then shares it. And then it's found out that everyone's been talking about my stuttering on social media. So it's just in,
It's whether just, it's, yeah, it's, we, whether we it's didn't have appearance. That.
And we're not ready at 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. We're not ready emotionally to handle that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does toughen their skin, I'm sure, or just make them need more therapy. So, and, you know, and it's parents that provide the electronics, there's some impetus of responsibility of how your child is using that and the responsibility of educating them about, you know, maybe we need social skills training on this. I mean, I've often thought about that, having a private group where I could help people with social, not just people with autism, just everybody with social skills. Like, this is how you be a human.
Think about this. So we have health class. We have PE and health. There's sex ed. There's nutrition. There's the drunk driving advice. Don't do it. Drinking drugs, alcohol, all these different things, right? But the number of children who have anxiety because of social media is social media and stress and anxiety related to it? Is it part of our curriculum for what's called health? It should be.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'd be something I'd want to ask.
Every middle school, every high school should have an expert to just, and it would be actually be fun. Kids would love it. Like mm-hmm. you do mock accounts, some avatar, and they do this, and what are the reactions this person could have? And basically, it doesn't mm-hmm. matter what they think. Well, sorry for the tangent there.
Yeah, no, raise awareness because it, you know, it's helping our world to illuminate these things and to have a conversation to say, you know, this isn't acceptable or this could be improved. And that's where we have to start because there's a lot of people hurting and feeling more isolation. And that's not what we're here for.
Part of what stemmed me going down that road is when you work with teenagers and adolescents and you build a rapport and build a trust, they tell you a lot. And so you start going into the world of what it's like mm-hmm. to be that age right now. And but anyways, this has been very enjoyable. It's great seeing you.
It was an honor. Oh, it was an honor. Thank you so much for all you do and being on the show.